Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Everyone, welcome to Feeding the Future on Heritage Radio Network, heritageradionetwork.org. If you can't be with us live, you can catch some podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher. We're here today on Feeding the Future. I'm your host, Oriane Cosentino, and we have a guest, and I'm really excited to have this person here today. It's Frank Castronovo, one of the two Franks responsible for Frankie's Restaurants, three locations?
Yep.
Times three locations, and Prime Meats in Red Hook. Or is it Carroll Gardens?
It's in Carroll Gardens, or originally Red Hook.
Okay. The borders got changed.
Well, the zip code stayed the same, but I think real estate gave a name to Carroll Gardens.
I see. Then soon there'll be East Carroll Gardens and West Carroll Gardens.
You know how it is, right? The village. There's only one village. Now this is five. It's nice to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. So today we're going to talk to Frank a little bit about his culinary past, present, and future. And we're going to, in the first segment, talk about feeding kids. I like to open the show each week with some tips that help parents and caregivers feed their kids a little bit more openly, a little bit more with a little bit more nutrition at home or in the schools. And or at events around the city or the country. So I feel like now is the time that everybody is rethinking the way we eat and where our food comes from. And it is mandatory to keep kids right there with us as we learn and experiment and try to better the systems that nourish us. So speaking of nourishment, I'd like to kick off our conversation today with a quote that I came across recently. It's by Mark David, the founder and director of the Institute for the Psychology of Eating. And I feel like it sums up really nicely a philosophy that I think lots of chefs and cooks and food enthusiasts have these days. And the quote goes like this: nourishment is not just nutrition. Nourishment is the nutrients in the food, the taste, the aroma, the ambience of the room, the conversation at the table, the love and the inspiration in the cooking, and the joy of the entire eating experience. Isn't that lovely?
Very well written.
I thought so too. And I feel like it takes a little bit. I mean, the food, of course, is crucial, but it takes a little bit of the pressure off what's just on the plate and sort of opens up the rest of the experience, which I think could be a helpful technique to parents who are trying to introduce their kids to new things and trying to create really good habits for the future, whereas you're not just like, eat this, eat it, get it. No, you must. You
know,
you're...
Eat your spinach and peas.
Exactly. Which is...
Even though they're gray.
Right. So we're trying to remedy all those problems by teaching people how to cook better, by teaching people how to buy better ingredients, and by teaching people how to have excitement about what they're putting out there.
Absolutely. I think it starts with the parents.
And that's exactly who I feel like we're trying to talk to, especially with this show and with lots of the programs on Heritage Radio. We're just trying to inspire them to not look at it as a chore, but to look at it more as like a joy.
Yeah. It's a necessity of life.
Right. It's either embrace it or...
It's the most important thing you should be doing or could be doing. So doing it together with the kids and the grandparents and everybody else, the whole family, is really kind of, the best way to do it. The way it was done for years and years, you know. If you had a forage or hunt, you did it together and you brought it home and you had a feast.
And to try and like take that philosophy even onto just a daily basis, where it doesn't have to be an elaborate ritual every day, but I feel like a little bit of a consistent approach and a consistent attitude that reinforces all of the facets, the ones that are explained in this quote and the ones that you're talking about. If those facets are reinforced regularly and gently, I think that everybody's attitude toward the mealtime improves, and it's going to be a more enjoyable experience going forward.
Absolutely.
And I talk a lot about cooking with kids. I know that you definitely are an advocate of cooking with the kids. But I've been thinking about that, and I know, and I even have friends who are terrified by that idea. And cooking with a kid sounds to them like a total nightmare. So for the beginning segment of this show, I was kind of brainstorming on some things that we could do or talk about that involve the kid in the meal but don't have to do with the preparation of the food, more like when they sit down at the table, when the meal is served, and just not so much a ritual as a habit, like I said. You just take a moment to talk about the way the plate is composed, talk about the colors on the plate, things that attract kids' eyes, because they always say the eyes eat first.
I think the best way to do it, and it's worked well for me with my children and worked with me as a child from my grandparents and my parents, was to get them involved in the process from the garden, starting right there in the garden, you know, putting the seed in the ground, watching the plant grow, taking the fruit or the vegetables from the plants, bringing them in, and cooking it. And when somebody sees, or a child, and I think that's part of what Edible Schoolyard is all about, and that's a part of what a lot of these organizations that, you know, are getting kids who are in urban environments and don't often get to plant things, you know, the Rooftop Garden Project, which is something that these guys are involved in, Heritage and Roberta's and stuff like that, is all about bringing the urban environment and giving it some earth so that you can plant seeds and you can grow plants, and then you can see how it starts, where it comes from, and what to do with it when it gets to the table. So the excitement is there. You know, you see something that's a little seed that came out of the plant originally, or the vegetable or the fruit, and then grew and then is now something that you're eating again. It's just, that's really exciting. It's exciting for me still, you know, today.
As a city kid.
As a city kid. Yeah. And we always had the tomato plants in the backyard, and the zucchinis and the eggplants and the basil.
Even in Queens.
Especially in Queens. Yeah. That's why we went to Queens. We had a little
to the
more
farmland.
We had a little more. Yeah, exactly. It was. In those days, I'm talking, my parents are from Brooklyn natives, Brooklyn and the Bronx natives. And when they moved to Queens, that was like basically Long Island. It's still Long Island, but it was just bigger house. We had more land. We had a bigger backyard.
Right. To them, it was the country at the time.
It was.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to find out if there was a fig tree in your yard. But thank you for listening to Feeding the Future. We'll be right back with Frank Castronovo of Frankie's Restaurants, Prime Meats, and Special High Profile New Project. You will learn about in the last segment. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Snickers by Obesity on the heritageradionetwork.org. Keep it locked for more Feeding the Future.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Hello, we're back with Feeding the Future. I'm your host, Oriane Costantino, and we're here on Heritage Radio Network with Frank Castronovo of the Frankie's Restaurants, Frankie Spuntino, and Prime Meats in Red Hook / Carroll Gardens. We've just been chatting a little bit about getting your kids involved in the whole process. From seed to plate, ideally, is a great way to excite your kids about the food that they're about to eat. Just really briefly, we also were saying that it's great to, well, it's ideal to grow with them. It's great to cook with them. But even if that's not an option, it's also great to converse about the food, talk about the temperature, the smell, the sights, and all the things that they're experiencing to ultimately create a good habit going forward and relaxed and interesting mealtimes for the whole family. We're here on this dreary sort of day, but talking about Frank's food philosophies, Frank's food history, his present and his future. We were just talking a little bit about Queens, and we both grew up there, so I kind of feel like we might have crossed paths.
For sure.
In front of Bayside High School or something.
Cruising down Fannie Lou.
Exactly. Google it if you've never heard of Fannie Lou. It might have its own page. I don't even know.
Go to White Castle and Bell Boulevard.
And how we both have Italian ancestry, and they came from other boroughs or Manhattan or Brooklyn or the Bronx to go to Queens because in the 40s and 50s it was farmland.
That's
literally.
Right. And the GI Bill
got them there.
Yeah, my grandparents came back from the war and they got, you know, they got money so they can buy a house in Queens
and plant their garden.
That's right.
And do you think that that's one of the things that got you on your path to where you are today?
It definitely is. Yeah. My grandparents, I definitely owe my love for food in one way on the Italian side through my grandparents. And then my appreciation and respect for healthy food and nutrition I get from my mother and my father, who were, you know, born in the 40s, graduated in the 60s, so they were that generation. Coming of age in 65, and they were into health food and hippies. And
I thought I was the only one in Queens eating tofu in the 70s.
There were a lot of us. Well, they went back to Manhattan and to Brooklyn because they wanted to be closer to the city. But I got the appreciation for food from my mother and my father in one way, and my grandparents in another way.
And in your restaurants, I believe a lot of your food is inspired by your grandparents.
Yep.
And Frank F.'s grandparents.
Yep.
Is that true?
Absolutely. You know, Frank's family also similar to mine from Brooklyn. He's a, you know, similar history, Italian American from Brooklyn, moved to Queens.
It seems like there was a special migration that went on among the Italian Americans.
Huge one.
Right? Well, from Brooklyn to Queens. Like,
or you went to Staten Island.
Right.
And then that's a whole different breed.
Yeah. I don't know if we can speak on their behalf.
No, we
it's
can't.
It's very different.
No.
And what age did you start cooking with your mom or grandma? Do you remember?
I mean, I remember always just cooking was always just something that was like everybody did. And, you know, I mean, when they asked you to, excuse me, put it down in a resume, when did you start cooking? You know, you say, okay, well, what was it, 13 or 14 when I started to cook, or 15 with your grandparents? You know, it was what you're talking about today. It was always involved. That was what we did. We woke up in the morning and we started having breakfast together, and we were talking about what we're eating for lunch, and then at lunch we were talking about what we're going to eat for dinner, and that just the cycle just continued. You know, at the dinner table, you know, my kids say it to me all the time. They're like, "You guys are out of your mind. You know, you just talk about food all day long. What are you going to eat?" And I, you know, for a restaurateur, you know, I eat home a lot. I eat home most of the time. You know, I don't really dine that much.
I was going to ask you that. I was going to say, did your role in the restaurants keep you from a lot of family meals over the years? But maybe not.
No. I mean, when I was single, before I had kids, I ate out all the time. And I think most people that dine out are always the single people, because the club scene and the hangout scene has definitely changed since we were younger, since I was younger, and you are younger. But
slightly.
I think restaurants are now like where people go out and meet and hang out. You know, it's go to the bar, go to the restaurant, hang out. You know, it's like there's many, many more restaurants now than there were 20 years ago.
And I think that many more restaurants now are kid accepting.
They have no choice.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, Brooklyn, especially our neighborhood, Carroll Gardens, Park Slope, Red Hook, that area, is the largest toddler population in the nation. So there's more toddlers in this part of Brooklyn than anywhere else in the whole country.
So you can't help but be a family-friendly establishment.
Yeah, you have to be family-friendly. As long as your kids behave. I don't like when people come and bring their kids to the restaurant and, you know, make the restaurants be responsible for cleaning up and keeping them in line.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't bring our kids out until they were able to sit and behave and be good. And I'm not talking about, you know.
Three, four.
Yeah.
You have two daughters?
I have two daughters.
How old are they now?
17 and 13.
Whoa. So you're past the...
Yeah, I'm past that.
All the stages of, are they going to like it? Are they not going to like it? Were they accepting eaters when they were young?
Yeah.
They were open. Did they go through a phase where they then rejected all of that good upbringing that you...
That's now.
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's now. They've eaten everything. They've eaten, you know, like food all over the world. They've tried everything. From the time they were babies, they just stuffed everything in their face. And they have a really educated palate. But I think that, you know, when you get to a certain age, you decide you want to be more picky, discerning your taste. And that's how they are right now.
Yeah, because they can make the choices. So
they can make the choices.
Do you feel like, you mentioned you had a healthy upbringing. Did you go through a little phase of sort of rebellion where you knew how to eat right, but you just ate crap?
Hell yeah. You know, I used to sneak to my neighbor's house. The Costellos, they had, I never knew what cornflakes and Rice Krispies and Chips Ahoy and you know, all that kind of fun stuff, Lucky Charms. And I used to sneak into their house and get soda and eat cereal, like all the shitty cereals.
I did the same. I used to fill my pockets.
But my parents, because you couldn't, I couldn't get it in my house.
Yeah, no, me either.
It wasn't in there.
Yep. I would literally fill my pockets with, like, all the candies and mints and pretzels and like, all the stuff that I'm like, pretzels don't have sesame seeds on them. They have salt. What?
Yeah.
Like, it was a revelation to me. And now I'm back to where I was when I was a kid.
Right.
Now.
Yeah.
My cabinets are stocked with all the healthy stuff.
Yeah.
The bread is whole grain. It's not white bread, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, it does come full
circle. I think
a
healthy mix is good.
Agreed. Nothing rigid.
Yeah, moderation is the secret of life.
And no rigidity. That's my big rule is,
no.
You know, and even even strict, like the culinary school that I went to had was a vegan curriculum. And even these people who were building, training people to go out into the world to cook in this strictly healthy way, even their philosophy was a little bit of everything, mm-hmm. a little bit of high quality, everything is okay. I remember going there and trying, and I wasn't a vegan, but I thought it would be a good curriculum to learn. And I remember early in my education there, I walked in and everybody that worked in the front had just ordered burgers from like the Good Burger Company. And I was like, what?
Exactly.
And they were like, yeah, you know, it's just a little bit of everything is what's going to give you the round and full health.
Yeah.
Profile that you need to have.
Exactly.
So.
I wish I could be a vegan sometimes. Just because I love animals so much.
Well, I mean.
But unfortunately, they taste good too.
If we weren't supposed to eat them, they wouldn't be made out of meat.
Right.
No, that's a joke.
Right, okay.
We're going to take another short break, and we're going to come back with a surprise guest. So if you want to learn who that is, come on back to Feeding the Future on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Heaven by Obesity on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Stay tuned for more Feeding the Future. Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Hi, and welcome back to Feeding the Future. I'm your host, Oriane Casentino, and you're listening to us on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm here today with Frank Castronovo of Frankie Spuntino and Prime Meats Restaurants, and we've been chatting about growing up in Queens, eating healthy foods when you're old, when you're young, in between, as you get older, all of those things. And now, in the last segment, I promised that there was a special guest appearance, and that's Mr. Frank Falcinelli, the other Frank. So now we have full Frankies
Frank on squared. The show. Frank squared.
That's right. So welcome, Frank F.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So glad. So I understand that you guys have a new project in the works that you've recently unveiled. At the Mesoamerica conference in Mexico?
That's correct.
Was it in Mexico City?
Yep.
Did you guys have a good time?
Oh, what a town. Mexico City.
You could tell us about that in another episode.
Amazing hospitality from Enrique Olvera and the Pujol crew down there.
Fantastic.
And all the chefs.
It was great to be involved in the process of a symposium, of a major food symposium. We've gone to them now a couple of years. We've been learning and taking notes, and this year we decided to participate and offer our wisdom, whatever, you know, knowledge we have mustered up in the last 60 years combined of culinary.
Yeah, we unveiled the iPhone 6.
And I'm going to get one after the show. Oh, my God. Surprises.
It's going to be a Samsung Galaxy, actually. Yeah. We're working for Samsung now. We're under contract.
Are you allowed to mention that?
I don't know.
I don't think so. Okay.
They're not listening.
We'll bleep it out.
All right.
We're working for bleep.
Yeah, exactly.
So you went to Mexico to also participate in the conference, but to unveil a new project in Red Hook proper. And would you like to?
Yeah, our talk was on, our presentation was on value and community. So we did two phases of value and community. We did value and community based on what we've done for the last 10 years and with Frankie's and the value that we offer in the community and how we give back to the community. And then the part two was value and community for the world intelligentsia of chefs and community of New York, and what we unveiled was a building that we purchased in Red Hook, Brooklyn, pretty close to us, which is a residency. The project's name is Res, and it's a residency for visiting chefs from around the world to come and stay with us and present their work to New York. So it's good for the guests, you know, for the guys like Enrique and Rene Redzepi and, you know, all the people that we've been traveling around with for the last few years, going to these symposiums and listening to their work, for them to come and present it to the New York audience and in a stress-free, non-commercial environment.
Yeah, I assume when they come here, they're probably on the go.
Yeah, and so it's a great opportunity for them to
slow down,
you know, visit their peers, receive their peers on the site, and kind of just, you know, even if they stay for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a day, they can put up, you know, they can put up whatever work they want, but it's their best work. And that's the whole purpose, is that New York gets the best work and they get to present their best work.
Will it be open to the public?
Yeah, it'll be, we want to sell non-for-profit tickets. So basically, you know, we cover the cost of the event and the cost of the operation, but we're not really, you know, you get to see it as low budget as possible.
And you had mentioned that in the first part of your presentation was about how you are currently giving back to the community.
Well, it was more of a retrospective of how we created value in community by, you know, opening our restaurants and what the elements of value in community are, whether it be, you know, being open all day, you know, having good alcohol prices, having good quality organic food at a low price without putting it in your face, and
being family friendly.
And, you know, we had a whole list of principles that we've been following over the last, you know, 9 years at Frankie's, and how it's worked for us and so on and so forth. So
I feel like it's definitely maintained its success and its progress over the years.
Yeah. Well, we work on it, you know, we're always kind of rebuilding it. You know, it's like an organism. So the human body, you have new skin every 10 days and a new heart every 30 days and a new bones every, you know, so it's kind of the same thing. We're always reinventing different areas and trying to keep the core of it while, you know, improving it and making it better for our guests.
Yeah, and in a city that changes so quickly, it's like you have to have those new organs happening all the time,
yeah.
Those new systems.
Yeah, and you also have to, you know, it's as much as you don't want to be a business, it's still a business. So you want to keep the business, but keep the business of the business as kind as possible while you're doing it.
Yeah, and it also, I feel like it does also have a heart, you know, since it has such deep roots and you're honoring such a, you know, you're honoring your past and upholding all of those principles, you know, like the fresh foods. And our grandparents were the least wasteful people. You know, they used the bones. They used the
Depression era kids.
That's right. And I feel like you guys are maintaining that as well, which is why I think it has the deep roots, but it also has the ability to change, which is, I think that's a unique thing.
Yeah.
You know. So who are some of the guests that you're anticipating at Res?
Oh, we've had an overwhelming number of people, of great, great, great people who've actually signed up and wanted to be participating in the job, you know, starting with, you know, the best chef in the world, great Rene Redzepi.
Yeah, I think our first resident's going to be Rene presenting his new book, his journals and travelogues. In November, end of October, November, he's coming to present it to New York. So I think that's going to be our number one.
Just start it off like that.
Everybody who was at Miss America signed on. Enrique Olvera, Inaki.
Yeah, all.
I mean,
that's great.
Just
Magnus
signed on last time he was there. We did a party for the fooding.
Chris Costow's
in, you know, it just keeps going, like, and it's all like the best people.
And it's a great way to see, you know, you're never going to really get to see, you know, a guy like Rene and hear his thoughts and his wishes and stuff that he loves and all his, you know, you're going to get inside his mind for that time he's in New York. So you would have to go to NoMa, and chances are you're probably not going to get, he's not going to sit there and just talk to you for 2 hours. And you can present however you want. He could actually put up food, he could just talk, he could do multimedia.
It could be theory, it could be whatever you want.
Yeah, we don't have any restrictions as far as what presenting your work is, so it's not like, oh, I'm buying another ticket for a dinner, and I'm going to dinner, and then the chef's going to talk. It's really
up to the chef.
Yeah, so because if you're presenting at a museum, or if you're doing a residency at the Guggenheim, or if you're doing it at Carnegie Hall, you know, you present in a certain form, but you're presenting your work, but they don't say what you have to play or how you have to play it. So it's kind of along the same
format.
Residency,
right?
Format.
And I feel like you guys preface that when you say it's a chef artist residency.
Correct.
Yeah.
If Rene Redzepi decides he wants to come and finger paint, then he can do that. You know, with kids, you know, because he has little children and he's always talking about cooking with them stuff. It's actually a topic that he talks about.
Fantastic. Yeah. Maybe I'll scoop him up while you guys, while he's in town.
He's not usually busy when he comes to New York.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
You can talk to him for 2 seconds, you know. You've got his ear for a long time.
Right. But you guys are going to house him, so you're going to...
Yeah, that's the beauty of it.
Yes.
So we'll have morning coffee with him. He'll be, I don't know. It'll be interesting. So
that sounds like an incredible project, and I look forward to learning more about it. You want to just tell people the website so they could just get the first peek into it, or are you holding off on the?
No, it's res res res
res.com.
Yep, res.com.
Yeah, and you can, there's also
ResX Res on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Any other ways we can find you guys out in the social media world?
Our website, frankiespuntino.com and frankspm.com, and Frank Castronovo on Twitter. And
yeah, me being Frank, or Frank Falsinelli, and we also have Frank and I, where we take a photo or we put a log in, it goes to eatersalmanac.com. So we're
getting into it. We're late in the game, but we're good.
That's okay. The game's not going anywhere, so you have time.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully.
I'm trying to get 10,000 followers by Monday.
Okay, guys, so you hear that. Everybody join Frank's Twitter account?
Yeah, no,
okay.
No. I can't keep up.
Well, thank you so much, guys, for being here. It was a total pleasure.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Feeding the Future on heritageradionetwork.org. Download podcasts from iTunes or Stitcher at your leisure, and we hope to see you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.